across the UK, online and on DAB.
Unfiltered Night Talk with the original king of unconventional conversation. The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Late night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Yesterday was kind of like the 4th of July. The way your face lit up the entire sky. Had to look away because it hurt my eyes. The way you hit me was a big surprise. Yesterday I really didn't know what to say. I wasn't making any sense, but it felt okay. Ask you if it was my birthday. This kind of thing don't happen every day.
Show guys with my flying without a license. Do people say that anymore? You're flying without a license? That I don't think I've heard anybody say you're flying without a license for the last 30 years. And yet the show was nearly flying sans license. Good evening, dear listener. Ian Lee, Talk Radio, 0844 499 1000 is the telephone number. Lots to talk about tonight. Bloody busy show. Alan, what kind of cake?
Because I'm bored of Battenberg.
Yeah. What kind of cake?
Lemon drizzle. What kind of cake?
Lemon drizzle. What kind of cake am I holding in my hand?
A Bakewell tart.
Nope.
So it's not a Bakewell tart.
Nope.
Is it a lemon drizzle?
Yes! Let me find the... Hang on, I've got the alarm that proves you're right.
Are you mad?
That means you've got a correct answer. Get this, Alan.
Yeah?
someone... Here's the rule of radio. I don't know if anyone remembers. In 1987, Mike Mendoza...
Yeah?
..was sent... I think it was a Victoria sponge, right? From a listener. He ate the Victoria sponge at the start of the show.
Yeah?
It was... you can ask him. This is a true story. It was laced with LSD.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. About an hour into the show...
Yeah?
..listeners started phoning up and saying, Mike, are you all right? Because kind of slurring your words a bit. And he went, yeah. An hour and a half into the show, he was convinced that people were climbing in through the air vents.
What?
2 hours and 7 minutes and 36 seconds into the show, they took him off air because he was tripping his nuts off.
Oh, dear.
He was convinced that he could not only fire lasers from his fingers, but that we were all connected by one word, a word which cannot be pronounced, spoken, or written. But he could see the word, and once he'd seen the word, he had ultimate knowledge that all human beings were psychically linked by their spirits and their souls.
And we're talking to David Icke again.
Imagine trying to get that concept across on a phone-in show in the mid-80s.
That is mad.
It's what LSD will do to you, Alan.
Here's a warning for you, kids. Don't do drugs.
Don't do drugs, kids. Now, here's the thing. Don't do drugs. 0844 499 1000. And also... Oh, mate, no wonder... I'm a bit off mic. That's why. There we go. That's, now I sound better. Also, don't eat food sent in to you by listeners. Now...
I would send it to the lab gay processed.
A gay process?
You know, no, get it processed.
Get it.
No, check for any hidden drugs and all that.
Not even worth doing that. Chuck it straight in the bin. And there is an even stricter rule, right?
Yeah?
Never eat something that was sent in by a listener anonymously. Imagine someone sends you a homemade cake, right?
Yeah.
And it was baked on the 16th of October, 2016. Look at that writing, people on Periscope. That's the writing of a psychopath.
That was on Sunday.
Okay. And they didn't include a letter. They didn't include a bit of paper with their name on it. As someone said on Twitter... The drizzle is probably spunk. Now!
It could be ISIS attacking.
It could be ISIS attacking! Whoever sent this, have the decency, have the balls to call in and say, yes, I sent you in that spunky cake, Ian.
You know the number?
0844 499 1000.
We call you back.
Yes! That's what I'm talking about. So someone sent me in a cake. This cake is never going to be eaten. I hope it doesn't sound cold and cruel, because this is a show of celebration, guys. There'll be no slut shaming here. It's a show of celebration, but I won't be eating that cake.
All right. Would you keep it as evidence if there's a police investigation?
Well, there won't be a police investigation because no one's going to eat it. And so no one will die.
That's good.
Alan, can I ask you a personal question?
Sure, mate.
Do you have a life outside of talk radio?
Yes, I do.
Beautiful. What have you called in for this evening?
Because on the previous show with Mr. Gould and Mr. Gould...
Yes?
I won the Tuesday quiz again.
I think you're the only person that calls in for the Tuesday quiz. Kath, can I get your lead for the thing, please? I think you're the only person that calls in for the Tuesday quiz. Would that be accurate?
Most weeks, I do call in every Tuesday quiz, but they call me back when it's near the time for the quiz.
Okay, well, I've asked you if you have a life outside of the station, and you're telling me a story about the station, yes.
Most weeks I don't win.
Right.
But very well I do win.
Right.
And I've answered a question about Ken Barlow.
Alan, I'm sure it was wonderful listening on their show, but we're on my show now, so thank you very much indeed. Thanks, Catherine's giving me a lead. I'll be following this later. Oh, no, it's a lead for the old computer. 0844-499-1000 is the telephone number. If you did make the cake, thank you. It's not going to get eaten. I do have a very, very strict rule. I do not eat food from listeners, and particularly, especially if it is sent in anonymously. It's just not going to happen because I value my life and I certainly value my guts too much. 0844-499-1000 is the telephone number. Lots to talk about. We're debating whether we're going to play the John Lydon interview tonight or we might play it tomorrow or we might play the day after. I don't know. It doesn't feel to me like a Tuesday kind of interview. It feels like a Wednesday, Thursday kind of interview. That's what it feels like to me, a Wednesday, Thursday kind of interview. Maybe we won't play it tonight. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. We've got Melanie, haven't we? Melanie could be a Tuesday kind of interview. Anyway.
Late night Ian Lee.
On air and off the loop.
On Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Michael's unhappy. He's texted 87222 25 pence plus your normal set nanning charge so the word talk. Michael says, Ian, you're so ungrateful. Do you realise the effort I went in just to produce the main ingredient for that lemon jizzle cake? 0844 499-1000. We'll play Melanie tonight. We'll play Melanie out this evening. We'll end the show with Melanie because it's a cracking interview that we did a couple of weeks ago. Lots of new people listening. Lots of new people listening via the podcast. Two podcasts went up this evening. Monday's Best Of and also Film Ring with Will Allen, the director of the film Holy Hell. I am here simply to serve you. Lots of new listeners, lots of new Periscopers, so let me just set the stall out a little bit before we crack on with the show. If you're used to listening to phone-in radio and late-night phone-in radio, you'll be aware that generally the host will come on and we'll have a series of things to talk about that have been in the papers, probably the migrants and Brexit and Cliff Richard. We can talk about those things, but that's not how this show is set up. I'm going to just sit here and I'm going to talk to you and to my team about stuff that's happened to me today and stuff that might be happening to me later in the week and a few stories that I've picked out of the paper. And you are welcome, dear listener and dear Periscoper, to call in at any moment about anything, and it can be something that I have I've spoken about that you want to join in with. Or it could be something you've spotted in the papers or something that's happened to you. And that's it. Really, there is no agenda. There is no... Nando, sorry. So I'm a little bit windy, Pops. That peri-peri, huh? That peri-peri. So there is no agenda. There's no kind of set thing. There's nothing that's off limits. Everything is up for grabs. The only... The rules are the rules of broadcasting, and that is you can't swear and you can't be libelous. That's it. Anything else goes, really. I do want to talk a little bit about Cliff later on because I'm fascinated by this whole story, and I think I've worked out what my position is on the Cliff Richard story. I think I've worked it out. We were talking about this yesterday, right? And you know, Cliff got to go and speak to Parliament about how people accused of sex crimes should remain anonymous. And I've worked out my current thinking on where I stand on this. But my thinking keeps changing a little bit. So, I'm a work in progress, guys. We're works in progress. So my thinking today may not be my thinking by the end of the show, if you phone in and tell me. 0844-499-1000. So, here's the thing, right? I don't think that people accused of sex crimes should be anonymous. I don't think they should. And I'll tell you for why, right?
He wasn't accused. I know. He's, and Cliff wasn't charged and there was no arrest or anything like that, right? And that's the thing. But if people go to the police and report a sex crime, of course it has to be investigated, right? Of course it has to be investigated, okay? Did the police handle the Cliff Richard thing? Well, they tipped off the BBC, so that was perhaps not appropriate. Did the BBC handle it? Well, they knew there was a story going on, and so they went and followed it. The helicopters may be a bit much. I don't know, right? But I think it was right that we knew that the police had had cause to go and search Cliff Richard's property. Now, here's where I think... No, I don't think they should wait until they're charged. I don't think they should wait until they're charged at all. But here is where I think the problem is. That there should be a maximum amount of time that the police have to press charges. Because with Paul Gambaccini, it was something like 18 months before they went, nah, we're not going to do anything. Right? And that's a long time. And I think it was longer with Cliff, wasn't it? Like 20 or 22 months, right? Before the police and the Crown Prosecution Service said, nah, I don't think we're going to do anything with this. And that is where the problem is. The problem is that for 2 years, is where the problem is. That's where one of the many problems are. And it's a very complicated thing, right? For 2 years, God, we're getting off on a heavy thing. I wanted to talk about me having useless tickets for Yusuf Islam. We'll get to that in a second. For 2 years, your life is in limbo and one is unable to work and one is, you know, is under a cloud of suspicion. And, you know, obviously it's depressing and it's upsetting and it's stressful and it's anxiety inducing and worrying for your family and all around that. But I think that person has to be named. I think that person has to be in the public domain. But the police need to pull their finger out and the CPS, the Crown Prosecution, needs to pull, Crown Prosecution Service, needs to pull their finger out and act a lot quicker. That, for me, is where... And the reason I've come to this is because if you read Paul Gambaccini's book, he talks about how he keeps getting messages from his solicitor saying, right, well, the police are going to get in touch with us a week Thursday and then we're going to know where they are with it. And generally what would happen that week Thursday is the police would say, we've not made any decision yet. And then it will go on for another month. And then they'd say, yeah, we've not made any decision yet. And it will go on and on and on. I think for Paul Gambaccini, it was about 18 months, maybe just under. And that's the thing. They could have worked quicker in cases where it's clear, right, the people that have come forward, their stories perhaps don't quite withstand significant probing. And loads of new people haven't come forward to say, oh, yeah, I'm glad that pop star's in the papers because, yeah, he raped me in the 80s. Right. Those people don't come forward. The evidence, after questioning witnesses and people around, it doesn't stand up. Then surely you could act a lot quicker on it. Can't you? And decide and present that to the CPS and they will go, yeah, well, there's obviously nothing here. This has been in the public domain for 3 months. No one's come forward. So, yeah, there's no case to pursue. Does that make sense? I think that makes sense. And as horrible as it may be, because someone could come forward and say that I raped them. You know, someone could come forward and say that I raped them or I touched them when they were a kiddie and stuff like that. Now, that hasn't happened, but they could do that, and I would have to put everything on hold. And I don't know how I'd survive. I don't know. I wouldn't be working here. Everything would be put on hold for. But if everything was put on hold for 3 months, 4 months, financially, I could take that hit just about. Stress-wise, 4 months, I think I could take that hit. I mean, it would still be horrendous and it would still be destructive and it would still have an incredible impact on my family and those around me and my colleagues and, you know, Mordstix Webster, you know, that thing, that the suspicion, right? But if it was 3 to 4 months, you know, if it was a third of a year as opposed to a year and a half to 2 years, that is significantly less damaging, isn't it? Isn't it? Now, have I just solved the whole... I think, guys... 0844-499-1000. I know I'm coming in a little bit heavy at the start of the show, which we don't normally do. But I think I've just solved the dilemma about do we name people who are accused of sex crimes? Yeah, we do. But we speed up the whole process so that it's 3-4 months, so that the team of police go in there and they investigate it. And they, again, you read Paul Gambaccini's book and, you know, some witnesses weren't interviewed for like a year, you know, character witnesses and people who, I think, I may have got this wrong, Gambaccini shared an apartment with someone or shared, it was like a shared house he lived in. And other people that lived in the house weren't interviewed for like 9 months. And you kind of think, well, you'd go to them straight away, wouldn't you? And 3 months seems a good length of time for it to be out in the public domain. So that people at home could see it on the telly and see it on the news. I think it was important that the Cliff Richard bust was on the news. Because had there been other witnesses, other victims, there weren't any, of course. I keep stressing this in case anyone is mishearing me. You know, Cliff Richard has been found guilty of nothing and has not been accused or charged or anything. But had there been people sat at home and they saw that big profile helicopter busting when the police raiding his house and all of this stuff, they might have then come forward. And the weirdest thing to come out of the whole Cliff Richard debacle is, didn't that apartment look horrible? His apartment looked really horrible that he lived in. I know he's got houses all around the world. But didn't that apartment look appalling?
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Unfiltered Night Talk with the original king of unconventional conversation. The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk. The radio show for people who know the best part of the day is the night.
Late Night Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
And I don't think Cliff Richard should have been invited into the Houses of Parliament to talk about anonymity. It's happened because he's Sir Cliff Richard. Is he a sir? I keep calling him sir. He is. He's Sir Cliff Richard. And I just kind of think that I do believe there is a VIP paedophile network. Too strong a word. I don't, you know, but I do believe that there are paedophiles working in government, working in Parliament. I believe there are, you know, serving MPs who are paedophiles, and certainly in the House of Lords. And I do believe that these people will use Cliff Richard as a poster boy. Son, you'll be a poster boy. They'll just use it as some way to kind of work in their favour, in their nefarious favour. And by the way, why is Cliff Richard, right, a man who's done nothing, right, on the front pages of all the papers when the actual inquiry into VIP paedophiles that was set up by Theresa May, God knows when, is in complete disarray? Why is that not a more important story? The fact that loads of victims of child abuse are still waiting to have an inquiry started that will investigate how abuse was covered up and was acted out and all of that. Why is that not a bigger story than Cliff Richard? Do you see what I mean? It just feels weighted wrong. Cliff Richard is a bigger story than the fact that the inquiry set up by Theresa May is onto its fourth chair now, I think. How long is she gonna last? I heard her, the new chair, and I don't know her name. It's either the fourth or the fifth. I think it's the fourth. On the radio today. And I thought, yeah, she sounds quite convincing. Yeah. And I thought, oh, hang on. They've all sounded convincing, then they've all jogged on. It's almost as if, guys, it's almost as if somebody doesn't want the inquiry into child abuse to go ahead. Do you know what I mean? Jelly bean? It's almost as if some people in power would rather that thing just kept going on and on and on and didn't reach a conclusion. Wowzers. Huh? 0844 499 1000. Chris is on the line. Evening, Chris.
Evening, Ian. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Chris, what you got for us?
I have to say, on the old anonymity thing, I couldn't disagree with you more.
Tell me why, Chris.
Well, Why do I disagree? I just think that if anonymity is going to work one way, it's got to work both ways.
Well, no, hang on.
Or not at all.
No. Hang on a second. You're equating the anonymity with someone who's claiming they were abused as a child with the anonymity of someone who may have perpetrated that crime, yeah?
I just think in situations where reputation could be absolutely damned for life, that until there is sufficient evidence to charge, you just don't name them
okay.
at all.
Well, then how? But what if there are more victims?
One would encourage any victim to come forward.
But it's not as easy as that, Chris. If you're, you know, if you're a victim of child abuse, even if it was 40 years ago, it's very, very hard to come forward. But if you saw that the pop star that raped you in the 80s is being investigated, again, we're not talking about Cliff Richard, but if you saw that the pop star that raped you in the 80s is being investigated by the police for accusations of rape in the 80s, that would potentially give people the courage to come forward. Strength
so
in
what,
numbers.
What is it that pushed the first person to come forward?
Oh, I don't know, Chris. How am I supposed to know that? Maybe they just couldn't take the pain of and the shame of what happened to them anymore.
Wow, I just cannot. I mean, I think.
Well, you've not told me why.
Acted atrociously in this matter. I think the police.
Well, no, we're not talking about the BBC. We're not talking about the police. We're talking
about the domination of the police.
They're different.
No, what they did.
No, they're different things. We're talking about about anonymity. And, you know, it could be argued, well, hang on a minute. Savile raped hundreds of children. Why didn't all those lazy gits come out and talk about it? Shame on them.
I don't know. I can't answer that.
Well, no, exactly. You can't, because I tell you why they didn't come out. Because the ones that did were told to shut up, were told to ignore it, were told to forget it, were told they imagined it. And the rest were crippled by shame.
But the Savile thing was all to do with the culture. I mean, you know, the guy
was not
even passes to hospitals.
Well, that's irrelevant. We're talking about victims. We're talking about victims coming forward.
I cannot help but feel sorry for Cliff Richard. And
yeah, I feel sorry for Cliff Richard.
As unpopular as this is going to be, you know, you've got the in the Ched Evans case, it won't be libelous, but you know, there's big things on Twitter that this girl,
don't tell me you think she's a slut as well, like the idiot who works here in the mornings.
Well, the complainant's got 13, you know, some GoFunding.
Yeah, there's a GoFund. There's a GoFund page.
£1,000.
Yep.
I'm thinking.
Do you know how much of that is going to her?
I've got no idea.
No, of course you don't, because you've just seen a big number and you've gone, oh, that's outrageous.
I don't understand why anything's been set up for her in the first place.
Well, you don't even know how much of it is going to her. I do, because I read about it. I looked into it.
I don't understand why they've set up a page for her in the first place.
Well, you don't even know how much is going to her.
Well, no one's saying that Ched Evans is a martyr or is someone we should set our...
But why are you upset? Why are you upset that a young woman whose life has been destroyed and people are naming her on Twitter and gobby radio hosts trying to make a name for themselves are calling her a slut? Why are you upset that some people have decided to donate some of that sum to her?
Because there are some people who are still sort of pillaring... Ched Evans.
No, Ched Evans has been found not guilty. He's been found not guilty.
Pardon?
Ched Evans has been found not guilty.
Yeah, but he's still been lambasted through the popular press, and he's a man who's been found not guilty.
But what's that got to do with a GoFundMe page being set up where some of the money, and again, you've not looked into it, you're just reading the headlines, where some of the money is going to the young woman whose life is being destroyed?
Destroyed because she engaged in something probably knowingly.
Well, you don't know that, do you, though, Chris?
No, but
she's been shamed.
I have to put my faith in the judicial system.
Oh, hang on a second. Are you putting your faith in the judicial system now or the first time when Ched Evans was found guilty? So it's not black and white, is it?
You go with the last one. Pardon?
You go with the last court decision. The Ched Evans case is a case in point, proving that it gets it wrong sometimes.
No, I speak actually as someone who actually was involved in a criminal investigation for some 17 months. And I know the effect that it has.
What happened to you?
Well, it was. I'm not trying to compare things at all, but you know, it was allegations of fraud that were made against me.
Yeah.
And after 17 months, two Crown Court trials. The second Crown Court trial lasted 57 minutes because the prosecution offered no evidence.
Okay. Well, then that's terrible, and that should have been sorted out much quicker. But that's what I was saying, Chris. Maybe you didn't hear me.
No, I did.
Okay. Well, then
3 months thing.
Yeah, well, then you'd agree with that.
I just don't think they should be named until they've been charged. It's just an investigation.
But if investigations
can take place,
yes,
without having to name the person involved.
But if they don't name that person, right, there is a chance that they may not be able to get enough evidence to support that crime. People, there may not be enough. The strength of the one person that's come forward may not be enough to get that person charged. But if we know the name of that person. Stuart Hall. Stuart Hall probably wouldn't be in prison unless he'd been named before he was charged.
Probably, or certainly. Are we saying this as a statement of fact?
No, we're saying, well, no, we can't deal with it because it's a fantasy situation, Chris, as you well know. We are saying probably.
It's not a case that I know enough about to comment.
Well, it's a case that I'm telling you about. You know Stuart Hall. He got sent to prison. He got sent to prison for being a nonce, right? But he was famously, one person came forward to him, one person came forward and accused him. When he was named, then loads more people came out of the woodwork. If it happened 20, 30, 40 years ago, one person's word isn't going to be strong enough. But if 2, 3, 4, 5 more people come out and they're able to, I don't know, describe a certain kink that person has, or maybe a blemish they have on their genitals, or maybe a certain word they said when they were penetrating them, then that would be much stronger evidence.
But that surely is the case of the, you know, again, going back, using Savile as a comparison here, you're a situation where, you know, people just, you know, gave him carte blanche, mostly.
But that's almost like, I don't understand why you're saying that. It's like you're justifying the fact that he got away with it.
No.
What's the carte blanche got to do with it?
I'm not justifying it at all. You know, there's a reason why the guy wasn't. There's got a reason why the guy wasn't believed. I find it difficult to believe. And you know, you've been involved in media for years, Ian. You know, I find it. It's very difficult to believe that the BBC can honestly put their hands up and say, we knew nothing.
Well, I don't know. I can't speak for the BBC. But here's the thing, Chris, right? There were rumours. When we played the John Lydon interview, he heard rumours in the school playground. There were rumours for years about Jimmy Savile, yeah? Rumours. Not just in TV, outside of TV. There were rumours, OK? There's been loads of rumours about Cliff Richard. Now, obviously, these are just rumours and they're made up. But if you go online and you type in Cliff Richard and all, you know, sex crime, loads of stuff will come up. Again, it's all untrue, right? But loads of stuff will come up. So what are we supposed to do? Am I supposed to go to the police and show them all these websites with all these rumours on?
I don't know. I mean, I remember several years ago, was it John Leslie, wasn't it? Was it Ulrika Johnson? John Leslie was... people in the media were saying they knew the name that was being bandied around.
Yeah, people knew the name that was
right on his Channel 5 show,
yes,
or whatever.
Yes, and John Leslie, of course, not found guilty of anything.
Yeah.
But so what's your point?
But I'm sure if we go onto Wikipedia and we look under John Leslie, there will be some reference to it.
Shall we have a look?
I don't know. Yeah, sure. I'm guessing.
Let's have a look. If it is, it'll just say he was he wasn't found guilty. It's John Leslie. I think we all should apologise to John Leslie. And hang on, where is he? John Leslie, TV presenter. Let's have a look. Chapter paragraph 4, rape and assault allegations. Yeah, there's a few paragraphs about him. No charges were brought. He said he contemplated suicide. Poor bloke. Why were we looking at that? It's not, you know, Cliff Richard's career will not be ruined.
I think it'll be forever tainted.
No, it won't.
Yeah, it will.
No, it won't. It's Cliff Richard. No, it won't be tainted. He was still doing concerts.
You watch. Here's the thing. Cliff Richard's going to become a hero now. He's going to become a hero for the downtrodden.
If it won't be tainted, the suggestion is then, Ian, that in 5 years' time, it won't be something we associate or remember him by.
Well, it won't be.
I guarantee.
Cliff Richard has ridden the storm out already. He's styled it out, totally.
I'm sure he would much rather not have had the last 2 years.
Yes, of course. And I would rather he'd not have had the last 2 years. I would rather he was named when they first investigated it and that they completed their investigations after 4 months maximum.
Okay.
So that any other people who felt aggrieved, as in the Stuart Hall case, as in the Rolf Harris case, could do that. You remember the first couple of people came out about Jimmy Savile after he died. It was a documentary on ITV by a bloke called Mark something. And the first couple of people came out, right, and we all went, oh, my God, there's two or three people that were raped by Jimmy Savile. This is awful. Within a week, there were about 100. Within 6 months, there were hundreds of people because they felt safe. They felt strong in numbers. They felt they were able to say something because at last they were going to be believed because others had come out before them.
I think it's the difference between everybody, every other case and Savile was that he was dead at the time.
Right. So what does that mean?
Well, in terms of Cliff Richard, it's his ongoing career.
We wait until these people are dead before we investigate accusations of sex crime against them.
The comparison's going to be made. You're making the comparison's being made to Jimmy Savile,
yeah.
And let's not forget that he wasn't alive.
Okay, Stuart Hall, Rolf Harris.
Pardon?
Stuart Hall, Rolf Harris, Gary Glitter. You know, they've all, Jonathan King, I can keep on naming people who are still alive.
Yeah,
But it doesn't sit comfortably with you because you want to keep going back to Savile.
I don't think I want to keep going back to Savile at all, but he's the one who undoubtedly started all this off.
What do you mean started it all off?
It's his case. Was it U-Tree, Operation U-Tree, was it?
Well, no, Glitter was found guilty before then of various sex crimes.
That was a long... Yeah, I mean, that's going back...
Oh, so hang on, I'm confused, sorry. So if it happened before Savile, that doesn't fit in with your argument, so we're ignoring that?
No, I just don't know why you're setting an arbitrary 4 months. I mean...
Well, so that it's done quicker, because they could do all the work quicker, so that it's... All right, what do you want to set? 3 months? 5 months? What do you want to set?
I don't know. I just think that naming these people is just wrong.
And you've not been able to tell me why.
My belief that naming them,
yeah.
Naming and shaming people, shaming somebody who's done nothing.
And yet you've not been able to tell me why.
Well, I believe in the presumption of innocence until proven guilty beyond all reasonable doubt.
Yeah.
Call me old-fashioned, then.
No, not old-fashioned. I think naive. I'd call you naive, but I wouldn't call you old-fashioned.
I'm not sure it is naive.
No, it is.
There has to be some premise on which we have a judicial system.
But no one said Cliff Richard was guilty. No one said Paul Gambaccini was guilty. No, they may have felt that guilt, and that's why I think these things should be sorted out much quicker. But again, you're ignoring the evidence that proves naming people helps more victims come forward and helps secure a prosecution. You're ignoring the evidence.
Just not convinced by the argument.
I can give you the evidence again, but I suspect it will fall on deaf ears and you'll brush it away again.
I'm not brushing it away.
Well, you're ignoring it. Off the top of my head, I can think of four examples where naming someone before they were charged helped more people come forward, helped strengthen the court case, and helped get someone sent to prison.
It's clearly something that we're going to have a difference of opinion on, and I'm fine with that, Ian.
No, I'm just waiting for you. I was just hoping that you might be able to explain your argument, apart from just saying that you consider yourself to be old-fashioned. And you can't do that, and that's fine, and that's fine. I can explain my argument. And it's interesting that you're only prepared to think about it from the accused point of view and not the victim's point of view.
Am I?
Yeah, yeah, you are.
Well, in situations, I guess because, you know, for me, my thoughts in this really have been sort of, come to the fore as a result of the whole Chet Evans thing. And I have to say, you know, who is the victim in this?
No one comes out of it particularly well.
I don't believe the woman was.
Well, what I'm not going to do is I'm not going to call that woman a slut like some other person who works at this radio station does. I'm certainly not going to shame her. Her life has been destroyed. I think Chet Evans has been found not guilty of rape. I think the way that court case proceeded was a disgrace by bringing out other sexual partners. I think that's going to put
sexual history. And the fact is that
irrelevant. I think bringing out someone's sexual history in a rape case. I think that's outrageous. An outrageous thing to do. What's that? The manner in which I choose to have sexual intercourse with 1, 2, 5, 25 other people is irrelevant.
But wasn't it because there were similarities in the things that she wanted?
I'm really uncomfortable going down this route where we're pointing the finger at this woman. And so I'm gonna stop it there, Chris. But I appreciate you calling in.
No worries. You take care.
Thank you very much. Cheers, mate. There you go. That was a robust discussion. Thank you, Chris. 0844 499 1000. I was so surprised, not surprised, disappointed that you get all these renter gobs on a stick who think it's brilliant to come out and call the woman involved in the Chet Evans case a slut. Imagine going on national radio and doing that. I mean, really, whatever you think, to do that and then to go on Twitter and defend that stance, that to me is just outrageous. Thank you, Chris.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Unfiltered Night Talk with the original king of unconventional conversation. The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Late Night Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Ah, dear. It was a heavy start to the show, but I don't mind. As I was saying as we launched into that, and thank you, it was Chris, wasn't it, the last caller? Thank you, Chris. I appreciate that, and it just shows that all sorts listen to this show. The show kind of goes all over the place, and we can do the heavy, and we can do the light, and we can do whatever, and we will have a laugh during the rest of the show. Don't worry, guys. I know what I'm doing. Well, I've got some good news about a potential guest as well. Someone's just messaged me, which is very exciting. I'll tell you more after 11. Let us go to Stephen. Good evening, Stephen.
Hello, mate.
Hello, mate. What
hip,
you got?
Hip, hip, hip.
Hip, hip, hip. What kind of cake?
Victoria sponge with a big fat one.
Oh!
Double cream.
Yes, sir.
Double cream. Yeah, lightening the mood.
Yes, sir.
Have you heard a bit of a gamer yourself?
Yes.
Have you seen the virtual reality what's come out today?
For the PlayStation?
Yeah, and the PC previously.
We were supposed to have a go on it the other day.
Unbelievable.
We didn't get to, we couldn't be bothered. Is it good?
I was a big sceptic. Yes. Really, really doubted it, but oh my God, unbelievable.
Well, so it's what are you playing it on, PlayStation?
No, on PC. Okay. With the Vive.
And
yeah.
These are the like the goggles where you can look around and you see all around you and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. You've got like two handsets and
what?
Things in your hand.
Like
a Wii, that sort of thing. Unbelievable. But gets worse.
Go on.
Virtual reality pornography.
Hang on a second.
Women have got to watch out. Women have got to watch out.
Not when you're around, I guess.
mate, yeah, I tell you. Taking over this stuff, I reckon.
Hang on a second. Right, so... But first of all, we'll discuss the adult points about it shortly. Mm. Although I feel slightly uncomfortable going from that last conversation to talking about virtual reality pornography. We'll deal with that.
Yeah,
there are clunky gear changes, and then there's missing a gear. But So it's really expensive, isn't it? The PlayStation one's about 500 quid.
Yeah, about that. So they're not cheap.
So I'm going to wait for 3 years until they come down to 150.
I'd play it at a mate's house, so I wouldn't buy one.
Pornography to one side, what games can you play on it?
I only played the tester game. It was
there. We go. You see,
you can't really do loads.
This is the thing that happened. Do you remember 3D televisions and 3D gaming?
Do you know what? I hated 3D.
Yeah. They brought it out. You could get it for Sky, and you could get games on the PlayStation. Wipeout was in 3D, and let me think of the other games. Oh yeah, they jacked it in because no one went for it. And I've got a feeling, Stephen, this is exactly the same thing. No one's going to go for it,
mate. I totally agree with you. I was a total skeptic until I tried it.
You've not played a game. All you've done is look at boobies.
There's not many games out yet. I've played this sort of, they've got testers almost, you know, different types of visual things, shooting zombie games and basic at the moment.
Yeah. And that's as far as it'll go.
That's what I thought.
Speak to me, I tell you what's the date today? Is it October the 18th or something like that, right? October the 18th, 2017. Stephen, would you give me a call and we can laugh together about how we both got a little bit excited about those virtual reality things that never took off?
I was totally the same when I've seen 3D, the first, until I actually tried this one. The PlayStation one's not as good, apparently, but on PC, it's supposed to be amazing. And it's about 700 quid, I think.
Exactly. Exactly.
Good PC.
Stephen, thank you very much for that. I got a feeling that it is going to be one of those things that ain't going to take off. It simply isn't going to happen. Says the man who backed Betamax. Let's see all the wrong horses I backed in my life. Betamax, the Dreamcast. There'll be some other things as well. I didn't get into Laserdiscs, although I'm kind of tempted. A mini disc, I had a mini disc recorder. And now I'm thinking, well, mini discs and Dreamcast and Betamax are obviously all brilliant. Everybody else was wrong. But 3D TV, I remember 3D TV was the first time I went, this ain't going to happen. This ain't going to happen. And they still kind of trot out kids' films in 3D. And it's kind of cute with the kids. We went and saw Storks the other day. 0844-499-1000, by the way. We went and saw Storks the other day. And it's kind of cool when, you know, something fires out and you'll see a load of kids try and reach out and grab it. That's quite cool. But as an adult, I wouldn't pay money to go and see a 3D movie. Waste of money. They're like about 8 quid more expensive. 3D TVs, all these people buying their 3D TVs and upgrading their Skybox to Sky 3D, and it was great. And at the moment we're only showing the tennis and the rugby in 3D, but you wait till we start getting some 3D movies. We've stopped it because it was a load of old rubbish. That's what it was. A load of old rubbish, guys. And they'll keep coming up with new ways of getting extra money out of us to go and see movies and play video games. When all we want to do with games, all we want to do is we want to sit back in a chair and that. And that's it. The two thumbs and maybe the Peter pointers. And that's it. That's all we want to do. That's it. That's all we want to do. That's gaming for me. That's it. The best game, of course, the best game in the world, and I've really been getting into it because my boys have rediscovered it. Pac-Man. How many buttons did Pac-Man have? Anyone? Kath, how many buttons did Pac-Man have? One. How many buttons did Pac-Man have, Ed? Four. Didn't have any buttons. You didn't have any buttons. You had a stick. That was it. No buttons. And it's weird. You go to, you play it on a Pac-Man cab. You get the cabinet. And you kind of, your left hand is like, feels like it should be doing something. Feels like it should be doing something. There's no button. Beautiful. That's what it's all about. Gosh, what a strange first hour to the show. But just, it goes to show that this show can be about anything. Later on tonight, we'll play the interview I recorded a couple of weeks ago with Melanie. And when we come back, I'm exchanging tweets with someone I'm hoping I can persuade to come on the show. I'll play you one of her songs when we come back.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Unfiltered Night Talk with the original king of unconventional conversation. The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Late night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Petra Hayden, who is playing in London. It turns out, by pure coincidence, we played her the other day. She's playing in London on Saturday, November the 19th. And someone tweeted her saying, oh, I've just heard you on Ian Lee's show. Brilliant. And she retweeted it. And it kind of got me thinking. So I tweeted her saying, you don't fancy coming on my show, do you? And she's replied with her, I guess her musical partner, saying, that sounds like fun. So, fingers crossed, we'll get Petra Hayden on the show one night. That would be awesome. She did a whole... And it's not quite as note perfect. It's not quite as slick as That God Only Knows. But she did the whole of an album by The Who called The Who Sells Out, which is quite an obscure Who album. Acapulco. The whole Who album. I might play I Can See for Miles a bit later on. It's just wonderful. She did it, I think, because someone challenged her to do it. She does other music as well and does stuff with instruments and things as well. But hopefully she's going to come on the show. Here's another person who might come on the show. I keep meaning to message her and I keep forgetting. Tony Basil. Hey, Mickey, you're so fine. You're so fine. You blow my mind. Hey, Mickey. Hey, Mickey. Yeah, you see? She might be coming on the show. She's also a brilliant choreographer and dancer. And the reason she popped in my head is... like a little video was going viral about 3 months ago, and it was, check out this 78-year-old woman as she shows a class of youngsters, a dance class, how to move. And it was Tony Basil, and I may be doing her a slight disservice, maybe she's 72. But she got up in front of all these kids and was doing some amazing dancing, and they were going, wow, this is great, oh my God, it's awesome. And I'm going, yes, Tony Basil, you know, she's a brilliant choreographer and a brilliant dancer. So hopefully she's going to come on as well. I'm aware, 0844 499 1000, we're playing Melanie today. I am aware that we tend to have blokes on as guests. I am aware of that. And I'm not going to do a positive discrimination thing and start, you know, well, we must have 50% men and 50% women and 25% must be black, and we're not going to do that. But it is in the back of my head that we mainly get blokes on to talk about blokey things. And I'm aware of that. And that's ticking over in my mind that something to be aware of. But we only get guests on, really. The only prerequisite to get a guest on is, am I interested in them? Yes. Fine, we'll talk to them. Am I interested in them? No, then we won't bother. And that's it, really. You know, we get the emails of, hey, such and such has got a new book out. They'd be great for your show. And I don't really buy that. If it is someone, you know, that we want to talk to, regardless of whether they had a book or a film, then, yeah, we'll get them on and they can come and talk about the book or the film. But generally, we just go through, like, our iTunes. Me and Kath go through our iTunes and go, hey, what about this? What about this? 0844 499 1000. Speaking of going through our iTunes, you may remember the other week I booked some tickets. I booked a pair of tickets to go and see Yusuf Islam, a.k.a. Cat Stevens, playing a concert. And he's playing at the Shaftesbury Theatre, right? Which is like a small theatre. I don't know how many it holds. 1,000?
Oh.
But the tickets were £100 each. And I bought them because I like Cat Stevens a lot.
Right.
But as I didn't know what tickets would be, and I joined his fan club, so you get notice about the tickets before anybody else. And I went on, and I as I was booking them, I was thinking, I don't know if I want to spend £200 on tickets. I don't know if I want to spend on I've just spent £200 on tickets. I just kind of did it. And I had buyer's remorse. Yes, it's true. I had buyer's remorse. Is there any cool air coming out of that fan? I think I can feel it. Just, it's so hot. Is there any way we can ask those guys before to just, like, turn it down, like, 20 minutes before their show ends? Because an hour and 8 minutes into the show and the studio is still boiling. Well, it's not coming over here. That's the thing. It's not the fans over there. It ain't coming over here. So I bought these tickets, 0844 499 1000, for £200, pair of tickets, £100 each. Right? And I thought nothing of it. A little bit of buyer's remorse. And then today I thought, oh, I don't think I've had my Cat Stevens tickets. Or maybe I have, and I've lost them. Oh, I don't know where those Cat Stevens... Anyway, so I went on the email, and I typed in Yusuf, and it popped up, and it said, your tickets, this email is your ticket. Okay, this email is your ticket. You need to bring this email with you. And then I checked the date, because I wasn't sure what the date was. And I checked the date. I went, oh, bugger. I can't go. I'm doing a live show, either in St Albans or Luton. I can't remember. I'm doing one in Luton and one in St Albans. I'm also opening up for Barry and Angelos in Finchley on November the 12th, I think. But it's on the 20th of November. And it's like, oh, no, I can't go. I'm never going to sell these tickets full price. Never mind. I'm prepared to take a cut. As long as someone can give me a few quid towards the tickets, and as long as someone gets to go, it's not a complete loss. And then I just started reading the email. And they've done that thing that they do with tickets now. They've made them, I can't sell them on. To come to the show, you need to bring this email. You need to bring the debit card that you booked the tickets with. And you need to bring photo ID. What? WTF? What? And I'm sat there thinking, oh, man. So I've got two tickets that cost me 200 quid. And I can't even, literally can't give them away. Because my initial thought was, oh, I'll give them to Kath. Kath can have them. You know, if I can't sell them online, I'll give them and she can go and see them. And then I read that, so I can't do anything with them. I can't even give these 200 quid tickets for Yusuf Islam away. How the hell is that fair? And then Ticketmaster have got this thing called, they've got like a website where you can sort of sell tickets on, I think, right? Called Go, I don't even know what it's called now. I think it's got the word now in it and the word go in it, but that's all I know. And so I went on there thinking, all right, phew, really, just right at the bottom of the email, you can go on this website if you want to get rid of tickets. I thought, oh, okay, that's a relief. And I went on there and you've got to type in the show that you've got the tickets for that you want to sell. And so I typed in, it said, no, nothing. So I typed in Yusuf Islam. No, no show for this. Cat Stevens. No, no show. It's called In a Cat's Attic. I typed that in. No, no, no. And basically, they've not, that show is not listing for resale tickets. I know, first world problems, guys. But it seems in, has anyone else, 0844-499-1000, right? Has anybody else come across this where you've bought tickets? Maybe you've bought the tickets and you didn't realise that you needed to bring photo ID with you, and you rocked up at the Hammersmith Odeon or the Royal Albert Hall or wherever, and they said, well, no, you can't come in, you need photo ID. It seems nuts to me. I get it, right? It's to stop ticket touts. I get it. But I'm buggered now. I've got 200 quid worth of tickets and I can't do anything. I would have happily, if I couldn't have sold them on for 50 quid, right? I would have happily given them to someone so that they, at least they'd get used. At least they'd get used. And now I can't do anything. And my mate is quite high up in Ticketmaster and I emailed him. He said, probably not a lot you can do. And it just seems to me to be absolutely bloody ridiculous. And of course, Yusuf will be looking out at the Shaftesbury Theatre. And it's a small venue, so he'll be able to see every seat. And he'll be thinking, yeah, I made the right decision to convert to Islam, change my name. By the way, if you're going to convert to a religion, is it common to change your name to the religion's name? That seems overkill, really. Terry Christian, another one. But Sammy Buddha... That's right, there's no one called Sammy Buddha. But he's going to be looking out, right? He's going to go, yeah, I've done good. I've been hedonistic pop star. Yes, I agreed with the fatwa on Salman Rushdie. That's true, he did. But now I'm at a place of peace and I've sold out the concert. Hang on a minute. There's two empty seats. I've not sold out. There's two empty seats. I've not sold. He'll be crushed. Yusuf's going to be crushed, and I don't want him to go, you know, I don't want to hit the booze again, because I don't...
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Unfiltered Night Talk, with the original king of unconventional conversation, the best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Late Night Ian Lee.
On air and off the loop.
On Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
0844-499-1000. We'll play the Mel and the interview a little bit later on. £200 worth of tickets. And I literally can't give them away.
And I can't go either.
No! I can't. How is that fair?
What if I stuck a little beard on?
Well, I haven't got a beard on my ID, so... How is that fair? It's just to stop ticket touts, but it means that the average punter, and I'm no average punter, but you know what I mean, is the one being penalised. Punished.
Mm. Well, and then, really, music is the thing that dies.
Well, it won't, though. I'm really peed off about that.
I know.
And I bought it on a whim. I bought it to cheer myself up, and that was stupid. Controversy about Little Mix on The X Factor?
Oh, yeah, why? Oh, because they're wearing the pants.
That's why.
I can see a Little Mix.
I watched a bit of that.
I didn't.
Because I got my telly working for the first time in ages.
Well, you say working.
Yeah.
You've only got two channels, haven't you?
At the moment, yes. And so I watched a bit of that, and I did think, oh, blimey, Governor. Ooh, that's going to chafe. It is. And then I watched the Crystal Maze. We talked about that yesterday. I quite like the Crystal Maze. Mm. I thought he was funny, even though, you know. First time I met Stephen Merchant, it was very rude to me. But that's fine. Second time I met him, several years later, he was all right. So, you know, so far it's been 50-50.
Mm-hmm. Wait till the next time.
Killer Clown tried to snatch my baby.
What?
Mum foils masked yobs. I don't believe this woman.
Go on, tell me.
A terrified mum of six claims knife-wielding killer clowns tried to snatch her three-month-old baby.
How many?
I don't believe... I do not... As we're reading the story, right, and this is literally as much as I've read of it so far, I do not believe a word of this.
Tell me the story, but put some music underneath it so we get some ambience.
Okay, let's get some spooky music. Oh, my music's... My computer's all gone to... here we go. Leah Newton was attacked by three of the masked pranksters as she left a late-night party. Maybe this music's not appropriate, but it's kind of clown music.
She left a late-night party with her baby.
Well, you take your baby out.
Partying?
Yeah. She said... I love the way it's all phrased. Claims. She said... Chinny Recon. She said she was loading her children into her car when the sinister gang pounced. One tried to rip little Destiny. It's not a Y at the end of it, it's an I.
Of course it is.
From her car seat. But they fled when they could not free the tot, and stunned Leah screamed for help. I do not believe a word of this. Leah, 32, also mum to 12-year-olds Shanique and Shanice, Leah Sean, 10, 8-year-old Demani, and Jazzy.
Why do we need to know the other kids' names?
2, said, I thought I was going to die. When they tried to take the baby out of the car, I didn't see that as a prank. People have taken the whole killer clown thing. So we're calling them killer clowns now. I thought it was just clowns.
Well, make your mind up, because they called them killer clowns and then they said pranksters. So which
people have taken the whole killer clown thing way too far. My daughter is so terrified, she won't go to the toilet by herself now.
Which daughter?
I couldn't narrow it down. The incident happened at 11 p.m. outside the Top Club in Huddersfield.
Mm.
McDonald's worker Leah, well, you think she'd be used to working with clowns, who lives in the town, said, I've three children sleeping in bed with me now and one on the floor, all scared the clowns will come back. And can I say something mean? No, I won't say something mean. Police have been inundated with reports of killer clowns over the past fortnight since the creepy craze took off arriving from the US. Can I just say, keep an eye on this story. Because I reckon it's going to come out she was talking bullshine.
You reckon?
She had... 0844 499 1000. She has completely... She's made that up, hasn't she?
Because the thing is, what we're seeing is lots of reports.
Yeah. Where's the photos? Where's it?
Has anyone been done yet?
Hang on a minute. So this was outside...
Because they should be quite easy to trace. They can't run that fast with those shoes on.
Outside the Top Club in Huddersfield. Well, they'll have CCTV footage. So why don't we get in touch with them and see if we can see the CCTV... What? No?
I'm still jarring with six kids at 11 o'clock at night. One of which is a baby. Aren't you?
Say that again.
Six kids.
Yeah.
I mean, I've taken little children to parties that have gone on late, I guess. But
here's... I'm sorry, I was distracted slightly by... Women could one day have babies made of their own skin. Okay, well, that's fine.
What?
It's a story down there. But this story is more important, I think. A wrinkly woman thief. Wrinkly woman thief. I'm surprised the word slut isn't in there. I can't believe that. That makes me ashamed to... Well, not ashamed to work here, but just some people. Into this microphone it was said. Shameful. A wrinkly woman thief fled on her Zimmer frame after stealing...
Oh, because she was old. Is that why they're calling her? Right.
After stealing a huge portrait of film star Steve McQueen. She and another woman pensioner nicked the black and white picture from the bar of a hotel called Bullet after one of McQueen's best-known movies, The Great Escape. That's a joke. It's from the film Bullet. I don't really like Steve McQueen films.
I think he's a very handsome man, but I don't think I've ever seen a Steve McQueen film.
You know, he used to... I read a biography about him years ago, and he was quite homophobic.
Mm.
And he would go around beating up gay people.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
But a lot of people were quite homophobic and went round. It doesn't make it any better.
But they dumped it because they couldn't squeeze the 6'4" by 4' frame into their getaway car.
Which was?
A Bullet. Police said both women were in their late 60s, wore glasses and had shoulder-length blonde hair.
I've seen them.
I know these women. I know these women of which you speak. The new hotel in Belfast had only been open a day when the thieves struck. The picture was later recovered outside Tedford's restaurant on nearby Donegal. Donegal Quay! It's Donegal Quay!
So what we're discussing there is a failed team steal.
Hotel general manager, we've got some gags coming, guys.
Excellent goal.
Michael Sullivan said, Eiffel Tower. The robbery wasn't quite the great escape the crooks intended. The unlikely perpetrators were foiled when they couldn't fit the painting in their vehicle. We're most grateful for the vigilance of our neighbours at Tedford's Kitchen for their help in returning the painting.
Gosh.
Police are appealing for witnesses.
I mean, that accent was quite criminal.
I was just thinking, the silence there was for me to digest the accuracy of the accent. That was actually for me, because I'll be honest, sometimes I don't get my accents quite right. I could be out by 3 or 4 miles sometimes. But that one, spot on. We have a lot of Irish people listening. I'm sure there'll be...
Not anymore, we don't.
No?
Never mind.
I'm sure there'll be... patting themselves on the back,
no,
to be sure.
Don't. Gosh.
You'll be patting themselves on the back, to be sure.
On the what?
On the back, to be sure. That was marvellous.
I'm going to
have a touch of the old black stuff now.
What?
The Guinness.
Oh. What?
The Guinness. I'll never forget when we had a minicab when I lived in Hull. Where did I live? Kensal Green, northwest London. And he was a Jamaican gentleman. And he told us about Jamaican Guinness. Have you heard this? He said Jamaican Guinness. He said, had Viagra been invented then? I don't know. When was Viagra invented? Anyway.
Mid-90s?
He said Jamaican Guinness was like Viagra. Maybe he didn't use that comparison because it might not have been invented. He said, you drink a couple of pints of that, rock solid all night, he said. And we're like, oh, all right. It's a weird thing to say to a group of lads in the back of your car, isn't it? To strangers, telling them how to achieve an erection. Mm. That's a strange conversation.
Was he trying to explain a tricky situation?
We couldn't see. But I was in the back of a cab once.
He's trying to relate, maybe.
And he had screens in the back of his car. And this was before people had screens in the back of the car. And I went, well, you got screens in the back of your car. What's that for, movie? He said, you bet it is, sunshine. Watch this. He put on a porno. And I'm sat there with my friend and the driver. Ed would have liked it, judging his behaviour the last 24 hours.
Filth.
And it was like full on, right? And we're like, oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. What were we supposed to do? You know, what are you supposed to do in that situation? Give them a tip.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Unfiltered Night Talk with the original king of unconventional conversation. The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk. The radio show for people who know the best part of the day is the night.
Late Night Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
I've been sent a link for the video footage of these old women stealing the Steve McQueen. Here we go. So they're not that old. Oh, yeah, the computer's going very slowly today. I don't quite know what is... Here we go. Go on, play. It may take some time. Hang on a minute. Oh, it's one of those shows, isn't it? Here we go. Is it going to work? No, it's not going to work. No.
Are they actual old women or are they people dressed up?
No, they're old women, but they're not that old. I don't see as... she does have a Zimmer frame, I suppose. But, I don't know. 0844-499-1000 is the telephone number if you want to give us a call. Jamie's on the line. Good evening, Jamie.
Good evening.
Oh, blimey.
How you doing?
I'm all right, thank you, Jamie. I'm tired. Do you know what? I nearly didn't come into work tonight.
Oh, what?
I didn't.
Why did you?
I didn't. Why did I?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I'm contractually obliged to come in, but I spent most of the day in bed thinking,
you had a bad day again.
I don't think I can come in and, there they are, look, fair play. There they are, there's the old woman, and she's got a Zimmer frame over her shoulder, and she's carrying a giant Steve McQueen poster, and her mate's nicked off. Oh, that's brilliant. That's brilliant.
Her friend's saying it's got nothing to do with me.
That is absolutely brilliant. I'll retweet that. Thank you. I'm not sure who tweeted that to me. Hang on a second. I can tell you who did that. That was Tracy B. Tracy B. Stiley. Thank you, Tracy. Thank you. Today the weight of the world, Jamie, got a little bit heavy on my shoulders. And it was an effort, but I made myself come in. I might take it. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But we're here.
I don't know how you do it. Like I know what it's like to go through what you're going through because I have the same sort of thing.
Yes.
I'm a week into my medication now, and I'm suffering the side effects.
What meds are you on?
Citalopram, 20 milligrams.
Oh, yeah, I'm on the citalopram. I love a bit of citalopram.
Oh, them side effects. Oh, my God.
What side effects are you getting from it?
I'm getting like this fluttery heart thing, like a anxiousness and shaking and headaches.
Oh, see, I never got that with... I don't think I got that with citalopram.
Didn't you get a trembling knee?
That was sertraline. Sertraline set my legs a-trembling. Citalopram, I don't... think I got that, and there will be people that will tell you that I'm on 20 milligrams, so they'll say that's, you know, I know some people that are on 60 or 80, so
wow,
it's, you know, we're on a comparatively small dose. My thing with these pills is I always give it 3 or 4 weeks before I start worrying about the side effects.
Yeah,
if they're still there in 3 or 4 weeks, then it's worth having a chat with your doctor.
Yeah.
Or have a chat. Who am I to give medical advice? Of course, if you have a chat with your doctor anytime you want. But from my personal experience, I find that the initial side effects with antidepressants for me tend to dissipate after about 3 or 4 weeks.
Well, that's exactly. You've got experience, so you're in a position to advise.
But, well, I could never advise medically. I can only share my experience. He said, covering his arse legally, guys. Legally.
As a friend.
And how do you feel about taking them? Are you all right about taking them?
I wasn't. I've been going through this for about a year.
Yeah.
And when you started your show and started talking about what you were going through, I sort of recognised what was going on and I acknowledged what was wrong with me, but it still took up until, about... few weeks ago now, and I took a load of pills and tried to end it all. And
did you?
Yeah, got that bad. Man. And then I went and got the medication and spoke to someone, and now I'm seeing how just stupid that was. And if I'd have succeeded,
yeah,
then, like, because now I know that I didn't really want to do that, and I want to be here.
Can I ask you a question that you don't have to answer?
Go on.
Because it's quite a heavy question.
Okay, that's cool.
When you made the decision that you were going to take some pills and try and kill yourself...
Yeah.
Can you describe how you felt?
I felt... I felt thoroughly miserable. I felt down. I felt like everything, even the simplest thing, was like a pressure. Like, because I'm a bloke, I'm expected to fulfil certain obligations as perceived by society, and I felt that the way I was feeling, I could not achieve that and look after my family. And what people have always said to me, but didn't you think of the children? And I did, and I thought, in that frame of mind, I thought they'd be better off without me. That they don't want to. I can't let them grow up seeing me like this, in case it hurts them. And
that moment, Jamie. When and if you don't want to dwell on it, you don't have to. But it intrigues me, right? Okay. And I know it will a lot of it. That moment when you, I don't know, you're sat on the edge of the bed, or you're in the bathroom, or wherever it is, and you've got the pills, and you whack them in your mouth.
Yeah.
How did that moment feel?
There was a moment's hesitation. I had a handful of pills and a drink in the other hand. There was a moment of hesitation, thinking, "Is this the right thing to do?" And then I thought about, "I'll go." This all happened within a few seconds in my head.
Yeah,
I'll lay down, go to sleep. I'm likely not going to wake up. How do you feel about that? And I thought, That was it. That was my response. Oh, don't wake up. Oh, well. Problems are over.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? And I tell you why, because stuff is hard at the moment, right? And there was a moment a couple of weeks ago when I've never got to the stage, right? We can have this conversation. Let's have this conversation. I've never got to the stage where I've sat there with the pills, or I've sat there with the razor blades, or I've had the rope out, right? But...
Yeah,
there was a period a few weeks ago when everything. Do you find when you're like properly depressed when you're in it that you can feel it, that it feels heavy on you? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like it feels like there's physically a weight on your whole body, crushing you.
It's like a lead. There's a lead blanket. I always think it's like a lead blanket weighing me down, right?
Over your whole body. It's not just the weight on your shoulders. Yeah. It's your whole body, your whole mind, your whole being.
And
I
had this
struggle.
Yeah, completely. And I had this one night the other week, right? And I was in floods of tears, right? And it was just, I couldn't move from the bed. And I had a moment of calmness, right? When I thought, oh, I'm going to kill myself.
That's it. That's the moment. That's it.
Yeah. I had the moment of calmness. I thought, are you all right? I was talking about this, Kath.
Yeah, no.
I had a moment of calmness. So I thought, oh, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. You know, it seemed like a reasonable option. And language is so... It doesn't really explain it. Yeah, once I made that decision, I was kind of at peace with it. I didn't do anything... I didn't act on it in any way. I didn't then go and, you know, work out what I was going to do. In my head, I kind of know how I'm going to... You know, if I ever do it, I know how to do it. But it suddenly
became a viable option, and it wouldn't...
Yeah.
To you wouldn't be such a... It would be so hard to do it if you did.
It was like, right, what could I do? I could go downstairs and go out and get a bag of chips. I could turn on the telly. I could kill myself. You know, it seemed like a feasible thing. And then what happened was, is I had taken my medication, which helps me sleep, and I kind of fell asleep. You know, I hadn't taken an overdose or anything. I just... I don't want to say it lifted for a second, because the weight and the pain was still there, but it just made sense. It's like... All right, that's what I'm going to do. Okay, fine. That's that decision made. Now, that was a few weeks ago. Yeah. And that was a few weeks ago, and I've not had that since then. And and I don't want to die. I want to live. I want to carry on doing this show. I want to carry on creating things. I want to carry on being a dad for my boys and stuff. But I'm aware
and the brilliant
that
dad you are, by the way.
Well,
I've often meant to say it to you. I wish I'd had a dad like you. Seriously, you're amazing.
I don't know about that. I don't know about that. I've messed up quite a bit. But But we're alive, and today is all right. And today was a tough day, but it wasn't as tough for me as it was 3 weeks ago. And you're doing stuff, you know, to help you sort yourself out. And, you know, we made another day, Jamie. High fives all round.
Yep, and please, if you get to that point where you are going to do it, just remember this phone call, because when I was at the point I wanted to do it and I did it, and I did it.
Mm.
And I didn't regret it. Even in the hospital, I said, I'm not suicidal. I thought about this. I know what I want to do. It's a rational decision. But now, I'm so glad that it didn't happen.
I'm laughing. I tell you, I'm laughing because I've just seen Dennis from Dunstable's calling in. And he'll be calling in Dennis to tell us to pull your socks up and get on with it. Back in my day, we didn't have none of this suicide nonsense. You just bloody well got on it. And if Hitler didn't shoot you, then you did all right, lad.
Things are different.
Jamie, I appreciate you sharing that, man. Thank you for calling, and I'm glad you're here. Partly because we need all the listeners we can get, buddy. So, you know, that's what we need. Jamie, take care, man. Speak to you soon.
Love the show. See you later. Bye bye.
Bye bye. Were you all right listening to that, Kath? Sorry, I was a bit awkward having that conversation, and you're sat there.
Well, it's hard hearing your friend talk like that, but I'd rather.
Do you know Jamie then?
No, I'd rather hear it.
Yeah, I know. It's. I know, and today was hard work for me, but it's not as bad as it was 3 weeks ago because I managed to come in and we're doing the show, and you know, and that's that. Kyle, stay there, come to you in a second. Dennis, 0844 499. I tell you what though, we'll miss the phone calls when Dennis is gone. He can't have more than 3 months in him.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Unfiltered Night Talk with the original king of unconventional conversation. The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Late Night Ian Lee.
On air and off the loop.
On Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
So Petra Hayden's emailing me now, so life is good. And I'm reminded, I'd forgotten about this. Petra recorded an album in 2013 called, 2013, Petra Goes to the Movies. I think this is all her Acapulco. Let's do this. Here we go, this is, listen to this. Huh? Isn't that amazing?
Goldfinger. He's the man.
Isn't that amazing?
She's doing the low bits.
Yeah. Just wow!
To enter his web of sin, but don't go in. Golden words he will pour.
Isn't that amazing? Let's do, hang on a minute. Here we go. Let's try this one. This is gonna play. Oh, man alive. All right, last one, then we'll speak to Carl. Then we'll... Psycho.
So clever.
Oh, we'll have this under the
tell
bed.
Tell you what, though,
you've
got to feel sorry for her neighbours. Banging on the floor.
Isn't that amazing? Well, hopefully we're going to get her and her friend, I think it's Jessie, on the show. And they'll either be on the phone because she's based in America, or we might go and see them because they're doing a show on the 19th. Maybe we'll speak to them. We'll get her on somehow. Be nice to
be wonderful
to get her on. Kyle's on the line. Good evening, Kyle.
Evening, boss. You all right?
All right. Petra Hayden Goes to the Movies is making me smile a lot.
Can you buy those albums on iTunes?
Yeah. You can buy. Yeah. Oh, she releases all legitimately. Yes, of course.
Well, I've been. What I was going to talk to. Well, one of the things I was going to talk to you about. I've been currently. I didn't realise when you bought things on iTunes, you can't easily move that to a different device or operating system.
Well,
can you?
You get. Don't you get five computers that you can access it on?
No, because tons of it is encrypted. So I've had to guess, that's what I've been doing.
What do you mean? No. But don't you go? Do you then go on to like another computer and download iTunes? And then you use your login on that?
No. Not if you don't use, like, Apple stuff.
Oh.
You can't. It's all locked to Apple.
Oh.
So I've been sat converting everything. So, sorry, bit dull, really.
Well, otherwise they've got you by the cojones.
Well, do you know what? This is what I'm particularly... Because I thought, in my naive way, Kath, I thought, if I like a song, I can get it on the phone. And then I can listen to it on a different operating system. No. So I've just had to sit there converting everything painfully.
Oh, well, hang on a minute. Just a boy. All right, we're buying that. Hang on a minute. We'll play Don't Stop Believing in a bit. Well, I made the mistake, Kyle, because I had, like, 50,000 songs on my computer, and I had about 20,000 songs on my laptop, but some of the songs on my laptop were the same on the computer, but not all of them. And I thought, oh, I know what I'll do. I'll transfer all of the songs from my computer, the 50,000, onto my laptop. And then I've got all the songs everywhere, right? And, of course, I did this, and it took me... I remember I would come in and say, well, the computer's still downloading these songs. It would take days and days and days. And, of course, what happened was I've now got some of the songs on my laptop, but I've lost a load, and I've got the original 50,000 songs on my computer, but I can't get them on to my laptop. It's a nightmare.
There is a way of doing it, which I've worked out tonight. It's taken me about an hour, but I've worked out how to do it.
Go on.
It's really dull.
Oh, in that case, don't tell me.
You're already half in. You might as well continue.
No, I worked out to do it. I'd read up on it, right? I'd read how to do it, and it still didn't work, and it corrupted files, and files disappeared, and some songs were there and some weren't, and some were mislabeled, and it was an absolute pain in the bum. So that's why I don't think we should listen to music ever again.
Oh,
that's why.
It's the only answer,
Kyle, is we ban music.
The one that it glitched on, you might like this, Kath, the one it glitched on is because you've got a copyright on it, so I can't transfer that or shift it any other way, was the Vincent song, the cover by Rick Astley.
What?
Which is
Rick
great.
Astley covered that?
Oh, it's brilliant. Honestly, if you can find it, it's absolutely brilliant, and I'm not joking or right. being like, ironic.
Who wants to know my sales figures for the Lindsay Lohan sessions?
Nigel.
Mm. I'd love to hear them.
Okay. Well, Nigel doesn't call in anymore, so he's not... I've got the sales figures. So, we have sold... People who bought the entire package... 271 copies of the entire package. Where people went, I've got to have all three. 271, right?
How many for the individual downloads?
Well, this is the thing. Some people went, nah... I don't know if I want the whole thing. I'm just going to go in for a song. So on top of the 271, in reverse order, people who just went, I'm just going to buy the one song, but I'm going to go for Titty Man. 19.
Oh.
People that thought, Lindsay Lohan is all right. Titty Man is okay, but I've only got a certain amount of money to spend. I'm going to buy Miley Stiley. 23. People who went, I'm going in for the single. I forget the B-sides and all that. I want the ace. I want Lindsay Lohan featuring Nigel from Maidstone and the DC DJ, 42. But what that means, but the 271, that's where the dosh is. So here's the money, guys. Here's the money. Let me hang on a minute. Glenn has done all the money. before iTunes take their cut, right, the grand total of £445.
Wow.
Suddenly you're interested. Wow. Oh, suddenly you're interested.
I was just thinking.
But then iTunes take 20%. So, oh, grand total before tax, £361.26. Now, considering that was just me talking to an obviously perverted individual and just doing what I do normally, that Kyle is golden.
So how much do you owe Nigel?
20 pence. I don't know.
Don't you have to pay tax on your amount, though?
Yeah, well, this is where I'm going to end up. I'm going to get nothing because I'm going to pay tax on it, and then I'll sort them all out. We'll work it out. But I mean, Nigel would probably get I don't know, £100 something.
Why don't you just move to Luxembourg?
I reckon it will work out very. If it's 360, Nigel gets 100, Dan gets 100, I get 100, and Barry gets 60. But then I'll end up paying tax and all of it. So actually, it'll be significantly less than that. Let me work it out with tax and stuff, because that's when it gets silly. But so, just for messing around on the radio,
I can't decide whether the word is shocking or impressive.
What do you reckon, Carl? You shocked or you impressed?
It's not bad for a day's work.
It's not, is it?
A day, was it, really?
It's not
well,
bad.
It was for DJ Dan.
Well, I mean, yes, fair play. Dan is the one that's going to suffer the most out of all this, because he actually put in work.
Yeah.
Nigel will get 50, 60 quid. That's all right, isn't it? You know, not the millions he expected.
Oh, so what? Don't forget, though, these things, like, bank up over time as well.
They do what?
They bank up.
Bank up. Oh. I suspect we've sold as many as we're going to sell. And I'll be honest, I'm a little bit disappointed by those figures, guys.
We need to start thinking about Christmas.
I've got nearly 50,000 followers on Twitter. I was expecting every one of them to buy it at least twice. I'm a bit confused.
Well, I suspect, even though you're probably going to have a go, and he's probably not your favourite individual, but I remember when Mr. Miles released that It's Never Going to Snow at Christmas, and then it was hit by, that was the Christmas we had the most map snow ever in this country.
All I heard for the last 30 seconds of you is...
Did you say Chris Miles?
Sorry.
Carl, did we get to the point of your call?
I was going to ask you about the Martin Roberts trail, which I thought you'd have an interest in.
Martin Roberts!
Well, that's it, because it's done in the style of Dr. Robert by the Beatles, but it sang in a Bowie-style vocal. What's all that about?
It sang in a what vocal?
In a Bowie style.
Oh, there is an element of Bowie. Well, it's just mashing it up, mate. It's just a mash-up. Don't try not to be constrained by society's rules, Kyle.
You could do that.
What?
Like, you know, do like a full album, but like a mash-up of different styles.
I'm going to say this. I've decided to resign from Is that not finished? From the music industry.
Okay.
I think I'm going to go out on a high.
I must admit, I was waiting for your version of No More Lonely Night dance mix.
If you, Kyle, like other people listening to this, have been affected by Ian's shock resignation from the music industry, there is a helpline. It's 0844 499 1000.
I just think, what's the point?
Why did it make you feel empty? Or
no, I've achieved everything that I wanted. Well, we got to number 32 in the iTunes dance chart. I mean, what is there after that? 31, but
here's my.
Is he not?
No.
Okay.
So,
well, I dumped that anyway. That may have been slightly libelous.
We don't know which Harry I was referring to, but we do.
Yes.
Zayn left completely.
Yeah.
Brave move.
No, I'm leaving the music industry.
No. Harry's going off and doing other things, and maybe he'll come back to the group at some point.
Well, Kyle, why don't you get that Simon, the listener who did a press release saying he was the Apprentice correspondent? I don't remember that being decided.
No.
He's a
law unto himself, that Simon.
Thank you, Kyle. Dennis!
Good morning.
Well, no.
Ian, lad. If you ever get listening to you talk to that gentleman, you're depressed. It made me cry, you bloody idiot.
Oh, come on.
You have any trouble in future, you know my telephone number,
yes.
You ring me, and I'll get rid of your depression straight away.
That sounds...
Please, don't do it again.
Well, I didn't do anything.
No, I know, but you said you nearly did.
Well, you know.
Never get to that situation. Listen, man, I'm being serious.
Thank you. Thank you, Dennis.
You're like my son. Oh. I've known you long enough.
Well, you're very kind.
No, don't ever do it.
You're like my great...
You ring me and I'll make you laugh. It's the last thing I do.
You're a good lad, Dennis. I appreciate that, mate. Thank you.
All the best,
see
anyway.
See you later on.
Don't do it again, please.
Ta-ta. All right. Well, I didn't do anything. And I wasn't going to do anything, you know. But, you know, we have that conversation. 0844 499 1000. Well, if you've just tuned in, you've just missed me libeling a pop star and announcing my retirement from the pop world after selling nearly 300 records.
Ed Manning the phones if you do want to discuss your sadness at that news.
People will be upset by that.
They will. It's like, take that.
We'll play Melanie later on. She was delightful. It was one of those slightly awkward interviews because I just get the feeling she's a little bit shy.
There's also a bit of a delay going on.
And she was from the 60s, so there's always going to be a delay. But no, I got the impression with Melanie, I like Melanie a lot, and that she's just a bit shy and a bit, you know, timid. But it's a nice interview. I'm pleased with it. We'll play that a little bit later. And two podcasts were released today. Now you can't get the full show podcast. Sorry, guys. You have to download the official podcasts. And what a surprise. 2 days ago, we were number 74 in the iTunes chart. Before we came on the show, we were number 13. You know what I mean? It looks like it's working. But there were two podcasts released yesterday. There was the Monday Best Of. And there was the film ring, Holy Hell, with Will Allen, the guy that directed the movie. And it's if you didn't listen to it and you've seen the film or you're thinking of seeing the film, it's a good accompaniment, actually, to watch the film and then listen to that and listen to the director getting his brains picked. And he was very open about all of the stuff there. Another hour of this gubbins to go.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Unfiltered Night Talk with the original king of unconventional conversation. The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Late night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Just a small town girl living in a lonely world. She took the midnight train going anywhere. Just a city boy born and raised in South Detroit. He took the midnight train going anywhere. Cheap perfume, for a smile they can share the night. It goes on and on and on and on. Just to find emotion hiding.
Love it. Love it. Hopefully we'll get Petra on the show. We'll try and tempt her. Sometimes people express a vague interest in coming on the show, and then when you tell them a bit more about it, they go, ah. Who's done that? Linda Lee and Shannon Lee, Bruce Lee's widow and daughter, respectively. Adam Schlesinger from Stacey's mom has got it going on. Who are they? Stacey's mom have got it. No.
Look Sly.
No.
Fountains of Wayne.
Thank you very much indeed. The Fountains of Wayne. He was kind of keen on coming on, and then wasn't. This is Ian Lee. Excuse me, I'm really thirsty. There's nothing finer than cold water, I find. 0844 499 1000. We're going to play Melanie a bit later on. Give us out times and all those kind of cues and things so that we know where to go. Ed is working on that. Ed is doing radio maths. You can call in, though. What have we talked about? We've talked about Cliff Richard. We've talked about anonymity in sex cases. We've talked about that moment when... I tell you when we... It was Jamie, wasn't it? I tell you when we were... why I asked him what it felt like at that moment. And this is going to sound weird. But anyone who's been in that moment will know. I wanted to know if he saw the same thing I saw. And I can't be any more specific. I wanted to know if he saw the same thing I saw. And I get a feeling we both saw the same thing. We've talked about that. We've talked about... what else have we talked about? It's not all been doom and gloom. We've had some funny stuff, didn't we? We had funny stuff tonight. Ed, let's have this microphone on, please. Thank you.
Talked about your Cat Stevens dilemma.
Oh, for £200, I got these tickets. I literally can't give them away because you've got to have your debit card and photo ID. What is that all about? I tell you what it is. Bloody Brexit. Bloody Brexit.
You bought them before Brexit.
Before June the whatever it was, I have never had to take photo ID to a concert. I've either been able to palm the tickets off or I've been able to go. Suddenly we have Brexit and I got tickets and I can't go. And not only can I not go, I can't get rid of the tickets. What is that about? What is that about? Boris Johnson, that's what it's about.
Was that on the side of a bus? You will be able to sell your tickets.
Gove and Johnson and Farage and Wolf and the Wolfman.
You know what you sound like now? Ramona.
Ooh. Hey, Ramona. Wouldn't it be great if Craig McLaughlin was a Brexiteer and he was so angry by snowflakes like me that he reworked his classic song Mona into Hey, Ramona.
Yeah.
And he did the lyrics. I've not got time to do it now. I'm doing a radio show. But he reworked the lyrics.
Tell you, Mona, what I'm gonna do.
Gonna get out of the EU. There we go, you see.
DJ Dan, if you're listening... That's another 400
quid. No, I've retired from music. I've retired.
I haven't even started.
No. You wouldn't be such a big draw as me. I used to be on telly.
I could dance around in my pants. That's what's done now, isn't it?
Stacey's mum takes it up the... Goodness sakes.
Where's your evidence? We don't want to know.
No. Sharon's on the line. Good evening, Sharon.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, thank you, Sharon. What you got for us?
Well, I wanted to talk about, you know, the amount of people who are DWP claimants who are having to take their assessment appeals to a tribunal stage because of factual inaccuracies in assessors' reports and blatant lies. I mean, surely it's a crime to lie in public office, isn't it?
Has this happened to you?
Yes, it happened to me, and I just thought we'd give this an airing because I belong to a very popular Facebook support group called 4UP, and there's hundreds of us victims.
Well, what happened to you?
Well, what happened to me is I went for my DWP PIP assessment.
Yes.
And, you know, when I got the reply back, I was astounded with the amount of factual inaccuracies and actual lies. You know, the one that made me actually fall over laughing almost was saying that I oriented myself to the centre using a sat nav. I arrived by taxi, and even the taxi driver did not have a sat nav.
Oh. Hang on a minute. So you're trying to get benefits, and they're talking about sat navs.
Yeah, it's like there's a disability benefit, and you know we're reassessed. And the things the assessor put down on there, just too many factual inaccuracies, which does not tally up with my medical records at all.
Right. So did you get the benefits?
Well, I'm having to go now for an appeal tribunal, like hundreds of other people.
Right, so you didn't get the benefits?
No.
Okay, so how long ago was that?
This was only very recently. Well, I'm now having to go for an appeal tribunal.
Right. Maybe you're not entitled to the benefits.
No, I am entitled to it. You know, I have, you know, compound disabilities.
What disabilities do you have?
Well, I have mobility issues, mental health issues.
What can't you do?
What can't I do? Quite a lot. Well, one of them was, you know, walking any great distance. You know, the others, you know, I have a lot of problems with arthritis in my knees and I'm awaiting surgery for knee replacement. And
how do they replace? What do they replace your knee? What, the actual knee they replace?
Yeah, knee joint replacement.
What do they replace it with? Like plastic?
I don't know. He said that I have to.
Well, do you not know? If my knee was going to get replaced, Sharon, first question would be, what do you do? What do you make it with? Second question would be, can I keep the old knee?
No, you can't. It's, you know, they do it and then they do it again in 10 years. So it's not something to look forward to.
No, no, no. And you're not allowed to keep your knee?
No.
It's your knee. I would demand my knee.
No, but what annoyed me with this assessor was when I was at the assessment, I mean, he waffled on about how bad his working conditions were for his provider and how dark it was there at night and how lonely a place it was. And I was like, you know, this bloke is a fruitcake.
Yeah.
And then he waffled on about how much he liked dogs and I'm sitting there. And one of my practical assessments
Do you not like dogs, Sharon?
I've got three of my own.
Well, there he is making conversation.
No, I would think he was doing.
I think what's that going to do with my medical assessment? I'm like,
because he's trying to get you to say. He's trying to get you to say, oh yeah, I like to walk my dogs miles and miles, and sometimes I run with them.
I wish I could.
Exactly.
I have a dog walker most days.
Exactly.
And it's but it was just, you know, to get across. You know, there was the film came out, I, Daniel Blake. We are all Daniel Blake.
Oh, yeah, this is the Ken Loach film.
Yeah.
The bloke who did Kez and Kathy Come Home.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot about this film recently.
Yeah.
And it's about a guy trying to get disability benefits, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's all true, believe me.
And there's.
If you look on Facebook, our support group 4UP, you look at the hundreds and hundreds of people's comments of people who have been lied to deliberately, factual inaccuracies, blatant lies. By the healthcare provider and the DWP themselves. It's unacceptable.
Well, I know, and I know that people trying to claim benefits, and in particular disability benefits, are struggling, and that's because the government doesn't care about you. I'm afraid.
No, they don't.
They don't, care about you because you can't make them any money, Sharon. So they're not interested in you.
Money, I heard a gem. This came from tabloid reporter. He told me that. Everyone who's knocked back, the assessor gets £75.
Well, I don't know if I'd believe that. I don't know if I'd believe
I don't
that.
Know, you know,
I don't know if I believe that. But they do. But they do. They want to. They want to save money. And who was doing it? Because someone company was doing it, weren't they? And then they said, "Oh, actually, we can't do it anymore because they weren't up to the job."
Well, Atos.
Yeah, have Atos stopped doing it now?
Well, no, the charming gentleman who did mine was from them, and, you know, I think he did more issues than I had.
Oh, God blimey. Well, maybe that's it. Maybe they find, you know, for all you lot that can't work, they give you a job at Atos. Maybe that's how,
Well, yeah, maybe this is what the greatest game is.
So what are you living on then, Sharon?
Well, you know, you just got to, like, struggle with what you've got at the moment. At the moment, I'm having the Disability Resource Centre advisor do my case for me for my tribunal because, you know me of old, as with the contaminated blood issue, I fight back and I fight back very hard indeed. So, you know, heaven help them when I do get to that tribunal because I'm fit to kill at the moment.
Well, no, don't, you can't let them know you're fit to kill because then they'll go, well, she can work as an assassin. She can work as an assassin. We'll send her out for MI6.
Double O minus.
Yeah, but we'll send her out to get another Max Spears. That's what we'll do. That's what they'll do.
I know, but no, it's disgraceful.
Yeah, it's outrageous.
You know, people who are, you know, disabled, who have a lot of medical problems, people like myself and others who are even worse off than me, you know, you're treated like a criminal, you're treated like a liar, you get your report back and you're absolutely astounded with factual inaccuracies and lies. I mean, how can somebody representing the DWP, a person in government office, lie?
Oh, because that person will be anonymous, will never get found again. It's like when you're on the phone to a call centre and the person spins you a yarn. Or they, you ever had that where you phone up a call centre and they say, they just cut you off because they can't solve the problem, so they just cut you off because you know they know if you phone up again you're going to speak to one or 500 people. And I understand. Listen, because you know my, you know, you may have heard me speaking about my mum Sharon and about her situation, and I understand why they have to be thorough, because there are, unfortunately, there are some dodgepots who will abuse the system. But I never forget when my mum, she doesn't have to get assessed now for like her benefits and things. But she did a few years ago. She had to, and she had to go every year. They would assess her every year, right?
Obviously, they're scrapping ESA assessments, but it's not for everyone. You know? I mean, I have long-term chronic illness.
Oh, exactly. She'd go every year, and she would get progressively worse every year. And every year I'd go... I go, does she need to come in? Because she's not going to get any better. She's only going to get worse. And
but don't you think it so debases and devalues a person's life? It actually makes you medically worse going through the stress of this.
Yes.
Because, you know, my mental health has suffered so much. I am an absolute bag of nerves at the moment. You know, my stress and anxiety and, you know, panic attacks have soared. All this is so unnecessary.
Sharon.
Even my own GP said, why was there any need for face-to-face?
Sharon, can I do something that will calm you down?
What?
And just breathe.
Mm. And explode?
No. Just calm down. Boo!
Oh!
Did that help?
What you lied.
Did that help, Sharon? Did that help?
No, but the chihuahua jumped 3 foot in the air.
So did I.
Oh, listen, when's your...
Don't you think it is atrocious, though?
I think it's terrible. I think it's terrible. People are dying because of it. You know, it's...
Because, you see, there's been so many people like me that have been put in the wrong category. Yes. I mean, when I went to see my advisors at Disability Resources in Dunstable, Pointers Road...
And they're good there. You know,
and they're really good. And even he said to me, when I told him the bit about the DWP manager has put on there, because I asked for mandatory reconciliation, she's put, oh, you orientated yourself to the venue using a sat-nav. And I thought, you know, is a woman on drugs? Is she hallucinating? I took a taxi there and a taxi back.
They
even
ticked
the taxi
a box,
driver
didn't
did
they?
Not have a sat-nav because we got lost, kids.
Sharon, when is your appeal?
I don't know. I've
just applied
because you have to wait. So
you're in the system.
In the system, yeah. But the Disability Resources are confident that you know it will be overturned and we'll get some justice.
I appreciate you sharing this with us, and I'm sure it will have touched a lot of people. Let us know how it goes, and we'll keep our fingers crossed.
There are hundreds of people in my situation. To them, I say, fight back and fight back hard. Don't let them get away with it.
Oh, I think that a lot of these government or council organisations kind of hope that most people will accept the first answer.
Yeah.
And that they are not used to dealing with people who will reject the first answer, and they'll reject quite often the second and the third answer and keep on pushing.
Yeah.
Sharon, best of luck, and let us know how it
Thank
goes.
You.
Take care.
Yeah, you take care.
You're
darling.
A delightful.
Thank you for having me on the show.
You are a delightful Bye-bye. Fruitcake. Thank you very much indeed. And I knew she'd take that in the spirit that was intended, but wasn't she? Thank you, Sharon. It affects a lot of people. That, and I like tonight's show because it's been
all over the show.
Done issues.
Yeah.
We've done issues. The biggest issue is the biggest issue is the misuse of the disused tissues. The biggest issue is the misuse of the disused tissues.
Okay.
Jock eyes.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Unfiltered Night Talk with the original king of unconventional conversation. The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk. The radio show for people who know the best part of the day is the night.
Late Night Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
So this is the story that's intriguing me, right? And I heard about it. It was on Radio 4's PM with Eddie Mair. And I heard a guy talking about it. And I'm trying to get this guy to come on the show. There's a phone call, please, Ed. I'm trying to get this guy to come on the show. Talk about it. This is the story. My UFO fan lover sacrificed to Satan. They've sensationalised it a bit here in the Sun. But a childhood pal of Orlando Bloom was sacrificed by Satanists as he investigated UFO conspiracy theories his girlfriend and mum claim. They say Max Spears, 39, fell in with a cult who pumped him full of drugs before he died in Warsaw, Poland in July. Conspiracy theorists, and this is where it gets interesting.
Go on.
Conspiracy theorist Max was found dead on a sofa in the city days after texting his mother to say, if anything happens to me, investigate. Come on. Come on.
Well, if he's a conspiracy theorist, he would have been saying that for quite a long time, wouldn't he?
No, but he only said it then. He'd only said it then, days before he was found dead.
He sent another message saying that he was in trouble or something, didn't he?
He was at a friend's house and a witness said, quote, there was dark liquid coming from his mouth. Max was genuinely fascinated by this. And the guy, I've emailed the guy, actually the email bounced back. Yeah, the email bounced back. Miles. I've tried to befriend him on Facebook and he's not accepted the friend request yet. Miles Johnson, I think his name. Johnston. Max was presumed by the Polish authorities to have died from natural causes, with suggestions he had a peptic ulcer. But his family believe his probes into UFOs and government cover-ups made him enemies who wanted him dead. Max's girlfriend, Sarah Adams, 31, of Deal in Kent, claims he was being held against his will. She said he was terrified. He wanted to leave. He wanted to come back to England because we were going to get married and have a baby. He rang secretly as they wouldn't let him talk. He said he was trying to get away from them. They were doing very dark black magic and satanic rituals to deprogram him and get rid of demons. He said they had given him something that had put him in a coma for 2 days.
Gosh.
And that's spooky.
The thing is, right, a year ago, 2 years ago, I wouldn't have believed a word of that.
Yeah.
Nowadays, I don't discount anything.
Mum says that when she spoke to a member of the group on the phone hours after his death, I'm genuinely getting goosebumps here, she overheard them setting up a satanic ritual. Vanessa said his body was there and I could hear strange suggestions. Vanessa's the mum. Of things that should be done. Things like put milk by his side and get garlic and put flowers and put vinegar. Very weird. One of UFO expert Max's group sent Vanessa a photo taken within hours of his death on his body. Within hours of his death, of his body with a red mark on his forehead. The same woman sent her snaps of him in a coffin wearing a silk suit and later posted her a satanic book along with his mobile phone SIM card. The bizarre book, Sacrifice, Magic Behind the Mic. I want to get this book. Accuses rappers, including Kanye West, of involvement with the occult. But Vanessa interpreted it as a threatening gesture designed to intimidate her as she battles for an inquest into her son's death. That is spooky.
An inquest. Why won't they give him an inquest?
Okay, well, I'll stop there because the next two paragraphs are a bit boring. But Max was buried in Canterbury Cemetery after Vanessa had his body flown home. A post-mortem was carried out, but the results were inconclusive.
Mm.
Northeast Kent Coroner's Office said, when the results of further tests are received, the coroner will decide whether to hold an inquest. Now, that is spooky.
It's right? Weird, isn't it?
And I'm trying to get hold of this guy, this Max, Miles Johnston, who was being interviewed. And this is how serious it's been taken. He was being interviewed on PM on Radio 4, which is a very serious news show.
I saw it on the news.
And I heard it, and I just thought it was fascinating. And I hadn't heard anything about this guy before. But that is a spooky story, isn't it?
Mm.
So we'll try and get this Miles Johnston on the show, who I think was a friend of Max's, to talk about it.
Even if you don't believe in the whole UFO thing, and you know, he was, he may have uncovered, he may have stumbled into something in the course of his investigations that put him in the frame for something bigger.
I'm taking our break. We'll come back and speak to Julie. During the ad break, I'm going to see if I can get that book, Sacrifice, Magic Behind the Mic. I want to read about Kanye West doing Black
Didn't
Magic.
Someone come on the other day and tell us that they knew about rappers doing various things?
No, we saw something on Facebook about how rappers all forced gay sex with each other.
Wasn't that the guy who believed that the Earth was flat as well? Yeah.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Unfiltered Night Talk with the original king of unconventional conversation. The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Late Night Ian Lee.
On air and off the loop.
On Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Okay, well, that book is actually quite expensive. I'm not prepared to spend £7. But that then led me to another book, which is only 19 pence, and I am prepared to spend that. The Covert War Against Rock. What You Don't Know About the Deaths of Jim Morrison, Tupac, Michael Hutchence, Jimi Hendrix, John Lennon and the Notorious B.I.G. I'm prepared to invest 19 pence.
Does the Notorious B.I.G. fall into the category of rock?
Well, hang on, what's cheaper? £2.98, and that's the price and the delivery, or 19 pence plus £2.80 postage. I hate it when they do it. Is that one from the UK? Oh, but I hate it. I'm freed. Hang on a minute. I think that's, you've got to pay postage. Oh, it's all getting confusing. Julie!
Hello.
Julie. Yes, Julie. What you got for us?
Do you know what? I thought that I could last the whole programme without phoning in about the comment made about the girl in the Chads Evans case.
Yeah.
And ever since I heard it, I've just been stewing
yes.
at how outright awful it was of the presenter this morning to say that.
In fairness, the presenter who said that isn't here. And I've seen it on a Twitter feed, I don't really want to kind of go off on a rant against her because
I don't want to either. And the only thing that I would like to do is just to redress balance. Yeah. I would hope that tomorrow I'm going to just read a paragraph, just one paragraph from the Telegraph.
Okay.
And would maybe like her to assess what this behaviour is.
I'm having great trouble trying to order this book, and it's charging me a lot of money for postage, and I don't want to pay. Anyway, sorry, carry on. I'm listening.
So all I want to read is the behaviour involved by the other party, which is...
Well,
that,
I don't think...
No?
I tell you what, because we don't need to... Listen, no one comes out of that story with glory, right?
No, they don't.
I don't want to get into the murky details of who did what and who entered the room at what point and then joined in with... You know, because it's all out there for people to find.
Okay, but in which case, I would like her to... I don't know. I just feel it's unjust... to comment on one person without...
No. Well, her defence is that she called them all it.
Yeah, but she did. But if you read her Twitter feed, it seems to be aimed at this thing. I think it just saddens me that what some people will do to try and get a little bit of attention. You know, when Katie Hopkins comes along and steals your thunder and you're trying to catch up with that, it's not a race I want to be involved in, man.
No, absolutely.
I don't want to be chasing that kind of... that kind of stuff. Now, hang on a minute. So I'm trying to order this book, right? And it was £2. It's trying to charge me £2.99 for the postage, right? I'm backing out of this deal, right? Let me empty my basket.
Come on, it's probably going to be pony anyway.
Shut up, man. What are you talking about?
Well, is it from a famous site for ordering books?
Yeah.
The most famous, I would suggest.
It's Amazon. I don't want to pay postage. Right, what I'm going to do? Hang on a minute. It doesn't sound pony. It sounds absolutely brilliant.
Let's just remind ourselves. What's it called?
It's called The Covert War Against Rock and the Truth Behind the Deaths of Many, Many Rock Stars.
Okay.
So covert.
It's going to be Pony. Ooh,
it won't be Pony. Melanie's coming up soon. We're going to listen to Melanie. Oh, now the
price. Covert war against rock.
Oh, now because I've been messing around with it. Now the price has gone up. The flipping heck is all
I'm going to have a look and see what it is online.
It's a good book, I bet. Super. Right. 19 pence plus £2.80 delivery. Right, that's what I want. So that should cost me no more than £2.99. Proceed to checkout. Perfect. Why couldn't we do that first time? Done. There we go. Ordered. Beautiful. Looking forward to that. That's going to be a good read.
Let me know what it's like.
I will do, Julie. I'll send it on to you if it's any good.
Please.
Cheers, my dears. Ta-ta. We don't need to go into the details of that whole situation. But thank you, Julie. I appreciate the sentiment behind that. No, don't call in anyone. Now we've done for callers. Phil Collins going on tour. I don't want to see him on tour, but I would like to read his book. So could you blag one for us?
I'll have a little go.
Phil Collins has admitted he'll be too creaky to play the drums on his comeback tour. Well, he's not creaky. He's damaged his back, didn't he? And he can't grip properly with his right hand. He has to tape the drumstick to his hand. Phil, 65, will appear for 5 nights at London's Royal Albert Hall next June, after a decade away, before dates in Paris and Cologne. His son, Nicholas, 15, will step in on the drums. Hey,
sweet.
That's good, eh? Bring your kid to work day. Former Genesis star Phil said, I don't think I'll ever be able to play the way I used to. It's a bit of a mystery. I'm 65 and I've been playing since I was 5. 60 years of drumming, messed up my back and hips. Now, I find Phil Collins fascinating because, there was an interview with him. He's got back together with his second wife. Mm-hmm. But she's still married to someone.
Yeah, and her ex-husband is causing him problems, isn't
he? Yeah. But he lives in Miami because he wanted to be near some of his kids. But he hates Miami. He says it's too hot. And I was reading an interview with him in one of the Sunday colour supplements. And he talks about how he nearly died of boozing and stuff. He's a weird one, Phil Collins, isn't he?
Well, having seen him in concert.
Oh, have you?
At Nebworth.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I thought he came over really likeable and charismatic, and he's a showman. And then during the sort of 90s, he was Public Enemy number one, wasn't he, for dumping his wife by text?
Except he didn't. It was facts. I mean, he didn't. He says he didn't.
Was why everyone thought it was a bit of a joke.
But he's very popular with black artists in America, which seems really weird, but a lot of the like rap artists and black musicians cite him as an inspiration, because when MTV started, he was on MTV all the flipping time. You know, he was there at that time. So that is what they grew up watching. You know, it was Phil Collins.
And he's done some tunes as well.
Well.
Studio. Invisible Touch, that's a tune.
She seems to have an invisible touch. Yeah. Those two are good.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Unfiltered Night Talk with the original king of unconventional conversation. The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Late Night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Right, well, listen, we are coming to the end of this show, but there's another 20 minutes, I hear you scream and cry, and you're absolutely right. We sometimes pre-record interviews, quite often with people in America, because they're on funny time zones. Normally we can make it work that we can if we can speak to them at the top of the show or something, but we can't always pull that off. And we've got an interview coming up with John Lydon, which is absolutely charming and delightful. But tonight we're going to play you an interview with Melanie. Melanie, of course, sang, I've got a brand new pair of roller skates, I'll give you the key. But she did other songs. If you want to go and have a listen to some of her stuff, then go and listen to her version of Caroline in My Mind by James Taylor. It's just wonderful. It was a slightly tricky interview because, you know, she wasn't particularly forthcoming with the answers, but some people are like that, you know, and it was, I found her charming and delightful. So sit back and enjoy me speaking to Melanie. Hello, Melanie.
Hello.
Hey, you can hear me. That's fantastic. How are you doing? You all right?
Beautiful. Just like you're right next door.
It's wonderful. Thank you so much. It's such a thrill to talk to you, Melanie. What are you up to at the moment? What does your typical day involve?
Well, I'm in Los Angeles reconnecting with people I haven't been involved with for 30 years or so.
Yeah.
And, I mean, L.A. has been it's been suiting me right now. And I'm writing, of course, I always write. I write all the time. I write prose and I write songs and... someday you'll hear all of it.
Well, this is what I'm hoping. I'm glad you're saying you're writing songs. How far away is the guitar from you? Do you play the guitar every day?
Now, it's about 10 feet.
Fantastic. And, does it constantly travel with you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I couldn't be without one. Definitely.
Your career, I find absolutely fascinating because you're one of the few stars... like Elvis, or so, where we know you by just the name Melanie is just enough to conjure up this image, you know, of this wonderful
well,
kind of.
Well, there have been several since, but I really appreciate you knowing me by my one name, status, Melanie.
Well, it's a rarity. There aren't that many stars where that one name just conjures up everything. How did you get into music, Melanie? What was the first song you heard that kind of affected you?
Oh, gosh. My mom was a jazz singer, and there was music in my environment since I can remember. And I think Dance Ballerina Dance was Nat King Cole sang it. I have a strong memory of that song, and I think it's one of the first that... My Funny Valentine is one of the first songs my grandmother said I sang. And then my mom, because I was just sang everything and in pitch and everything, my mom thought I was the next Shirley Temple.
Wow.
Yeah, really. That was a long shot. So she took me for tap dancing lessons, which in my recollection is kind of funny because I'm such not a dancer. I love moving, you know, but I have my own little way of moving and learning tap dancing was kind of funny. I remember brush, brush, step, and I loved the noise the shoes made. But other than that, I was a complete failure.
When you see, you know, a proper tap, doing it at speed, it's an amazing skill. But yeah, it takes a lot of work. When did you first pick up the guitar, Melanie?
Well, the ukulele was in my house,
right?
And my uncle had a guitar, but that was too big. So I learned first on a ukulele. It was a baritone ukulele. It wasn't one of those silly little ukuleles.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, a baritone, which was kind of the size of a child's guitar.
Yeah.
You know. I started that.
And it felt comfortable. You kind of connected with it early on, did you?
Early on.
How old would you have been, do you think?
Four was when I have a recollection of being put on a talent show with my mother. It was siblings and... You know, it's a duo.
You know,
be in the family. And we won second runner-up.
Who beat you?
A black man and his son.
Okay.
And I was with my mom, and I won a Tiny Tears doll. And that was
fantastic.
To me, like, this probably was the early incentive for being in the music business. You know, it's like, you can get things like this.
You can get as many Tiny Tears dolls as you want.
Your voice is unique, and it's one of those. Again, it's one of those voices. As soon as you hear it, you know you know exactly who it is that's singing. How did you develop your style?
Well, yeah, it's interesting because my role models were Billie Holiday and Peggy Lee and my mom and then later Joan Baez.
Mm.
And I went out to imitate all of them and got it wrong. You know? I always had a very gravelly sort of voice. And so even as a child, it was a little less than pretty. But, you know, to me, singing has nothing to do with making a pretty sound because you can learn how to do that.
Yeah.
To me, it's a way to express something that's deeply personal and inside yourself, and my voice suited it just right.
Do you not think that your voice is pretty, then?
I wouldn't call it pretty, no.
Really? That surprises me, because there is something... I'm trying to find the right words. I would say it's beautiful, it's unique. Aww. There's something childlike about it as well.
Yeah, yeah. Again, I think it's also expressive. You know,
yeah.
It interprets things from your inner deepest self. So there's unfortunately too much child in me.
It's good. My favourite album of yours is Live at Carnegie Hall, and it's just so joyful to hear, you know, your voice it playing that huge place and people singing along with you and that must have been a lot of fun. Do you still get fun doing concerts?
Oh, that's my main motivation.
Yeah,
I certainly don't like the stuff in between. It's just getting out there and you know, if I could be popped right onto the theater stage and popped right back and popped right up. But it's all that stuff in between that's, you know.
I heard someone else, I can't remember who, but another singer saying they get paid for the travelling and they do the concerts for free. But it's the bits on the aeroplanes and in the hotels.
Perfect description. Absolutely.
What do you remember about that Carnegie Hall concert? Because it's such a lovely album.
Well, you know, because it's recorded, it's probably difficult to extract my memory from what I hear. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
I know it was really magical, and we recorded it, thank God, so we have it. But, you know, I was doing so many concerts that I could probably mix it up with... you know, live at Morecambe or something. I don't know.
I bet you can't mix up. I mean, one of the other the famous concerts, of course, was the Isle of Wight Festival in 1970, was that?
Your guess is better than mine.
Something, is 70 or 71?
Yeah. It was, I know it was with Jimi Hendrix, and I know it was his last festival. And we actually went back on to New York on the same plane.
Wow. What was he like?
Well, on the plane, you know, he was... I don't really know. I didn't go home with him. But I did travel that whole way, and we did talk. And we were both in the first-class cabin.
Yeah.
And at that point, there was a lot of them against us, kind of. You know, we were the hippies.
Oh.
There were these few businessmen who had a little too much to drink, and they were a little too vocal. And I actually was defending Jimi Hendrix.
Wow!
He was sort of like, oh, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
What were they upset about? What, because he was black, or because he was an extravagant rock stars?
We were both, you know, pretty odd, you know, people in first class.
Yeah.
You know, it was all suits and business, and there we were, you know.
It is the Isle of Wight Festival. I've seen the film of it, and it's a stunning film. And I mean, God knows how many people there, 150, 200,000, I don't know, something ridiculous.
Yeah.
And your voice, you know, your voice that I think is beautiful, and you say isn't pretty, but like your voice,
well,
filling
beautiful
that.
Beautiful is different than pretty,
yes.
I guess.
you're right.
I'll take beautiful.
Okay,
things.
but it, you know, it's playing that huge festival. That must have been I don't know. Was it terrifying?
Well, you know, I wasn't as terrified anymore because I had already done Woodstock.
I suppose so. Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I was I wouldn't say seasoned, but I had that, and I knew I didn't get stoned to death or anything. So, I mean, that was when I first, I mean, I couldn't imagine getting up in front of all those people and, you know, doing just by myself with a guitar, and I didn't have any songs that were well known, But it was the whole, people were so receptive, you
yeah.
know, that, and even though it was, I followed The Who, which,
wow.
Was that, yeah, that was the one. Where
the Isle of Wight,
Keith
yeah, gosh.
Moon, Keith Moon introduced me to the audience because they had played hours into
yeah.
the night, and then by the time they broke the set, stage down, nobody wanted to follow The Who. I mean, Jim Morrison actually physically ran. They were trying to get him to get, you know, to follow The Who. And I don't know, I just said sure, not knowing what I was doing probably. And they, you know, I was on, but Keith Moon did introduce me. It was dawn
yeah.
when I finally got up, and most everyone was sleeping, you know, so little by little I saw heads pop up and sunrise, and it was so perfect, you know, and again I resonated with the people there. I welcomed them to the next day.
My favourite song, and it's an obvious choice, but it really is. It's the first song I heard of yours, or the first song I was aware was you. The James Taylor song, Carolina in My Mind.
Oh, yeah.
I love that. How did you come across that?
Well, you know, it's funny. He wasn't well known.
No.
I was, you know, I think I was doing one of those radio shows where you pick your favourite songs, and I played him on the radio, and I loved that particular song. And I haven't done that many versions of other people's songs. I did, of course, Ruby Tuesday.
Yeah.
Some people even think I wrote that song.
Wow.
They identify, well, in other countries, they don't know, you know. I just really loved that particular song, you know, the imagery, and I thought he was a brilliant writer and had promise.
Yeah, just a little bit of promise. He wasn't bad, that James Taylor.
No, no.
He could do a few good songs.
There were other people who had promise, and you never heard of them
yeah.
again.
And you're still writing songs. Are you recording more songs, Melanie? Are we going to hear something soon?
Yes, I record all the time. I don't have a big giant machine behind me.
No.
You know, I when I announce to the world, it tends to go to smaller places than the world. But I'm, you know, that's why I'm in LA. I need to change that. So I'm shouting my heart out, and people have to hear that. I've got to get back to England.
Well, I was going to say, when are you coming back? Because it's been a while.
Am I coming back? Good question. I'm planning on coming back this year.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, brilliant.
How and when, I don't know, but we're going to do it. You know?
Oh, well, Melanie, if you come over, then I'm going to make sure that my producer, Catherine, and myself, we come along, we say hello, and we come and see some of your shows, because I would absolutely
Definitely.
Love to see you in concert.
Definitely.
Melanie,
okay.
It's so nice to talk to you, and it's so nice to hear your voice and to know that you're still enjoying it and you're still writing songs, and long may that continue.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time. Take care.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.